Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everything's getting more expensive these days. Gas, rent, and even your music. While other music services keep jacking up their prices, Live One is letting you lock in the best music membership at the best price. Live One Plus is just $3.99 per month. Get all your favorite music ad-free, along with unlimited skips and maximum audio quality. Beat inflation with the best deal in music at just $3.99 per month. Visit liveone.com/bestmusic to get Live One Plus now.
The Christmas countdown's on at JCPenney. Through Saturday, use your coupon and dash away with very merry savings on last-minute gifts across the store, like fine jewelry stocking stuffers up to 70% off after coupon, and save up to 50% on comfy, stylish outerwear for the whole fam. Add curbside pickup to make your trip extra quick. We got your holiday. JCPenney. Offers good on select items through 12/24. Exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
Hello, wrestling friends. I'm Matt Kuhn, which means you're listening to the Gentleman Villain Podcast with the Gentleman Villain himself, the head of the BCC, Mr. Lord Stephen William Regal. How are you doing today, Mr. Regal?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Matt?
I am
well,
great.
Then again, bit of a problem this week.
Oh, what's that? What happened this week, Mr. Regal?
Well, I woke up and I thought I was a moth. I just woke up one morning and I thought I was a moth and I thought, oh, this don't feel right. So I thought I better go to the doctor's. So I went to the doctor's and he said, what's the problem? I said, I think I'm a moth. He said, you don't need to be here, Flower. He said, you need to be at the psychiatrist down the road. I said, well, I was on my way there, but I saw your light was on.
Well, Mr. Regal, that's a great way to start the show. And I want to start with another subject. We have a fun show. Right. We had a not so fun show last week, but everybody's talking about it, talking about MJF. But I want to ask you something. It's curious to me. You know, you're a 54-year-old man.
Yes.
I'm just a few years younger, but your hair is in magnificent shape. What is your hair routine, if you have any at all?
Oh, see, I get asked this a lot. I should give them a plug in. I can't remember the name of the. There's a organic apple cider vinegar shampoo that I use from Sprouts or Whole Foods. They sell it. I'm trying to think of the name of it. And then all I do is take a tiny little bit of extra virgin coconut oil, and I just do that. And that's about as much as it gets.
The coconut oil is the secret. That's the secret.
Maybe. I don't know. But it's just, I suppose I'm fortunate. It's obviously getting a little, I have the sugar whiffs added, as you can see on the side. They've come in. I don't like to call it grey, obviously. Far too, you know, me to admit that I'm grey. Sugar whiffs. Makes me sound a bit more theatrical, doesn't it? But yeah, that's it. I'm fortunate. My granddad had a bear till he passed away at 89, and my dad's got a good set of hair. So there we go.
Well, we start with a little light.
Hopefully it stays, because believe me, if there's a slightest bit when there's ever the biscuit comes on the back, you know, it starts off like with a Ritz cracker, and then it gets to the bigger one. If it gets that, it's gone. I'm not going to be one of them. I'm not going to have one of them comb overs or anything like that. No.
Well, today we have a fun show. It's our first watch along. So you can watch along over on the Peacock Network, which is where that's where the stuff is. And we wish they had more on there, but what they do have is WCW from October 9th, 1993, which is it's a great episode of WCW Saturday Night. It's a snapshot in time. One thing is, you have a match with Arn Anderson for the TV title, and the headline match is Ricky Steamboat versus Vader. So I think this will be a lot of fun for you to watch today.
Yes, wonderful.
So we're going to set up.
I haven't seen this. I wouldn't have seen this until I don't know, because if I was wrestling on the Saturday night that it was on, I may never have seen this. So, because, you know, I don't watch my own stuff. And if I was at the show and I've watched all the show, which I used to watch everything, and any show I was on, I'd watch it, unless there was an absolute reason why they took me away to film something, I'm watching the show. So there's a good chance on the Saturday night that it was actually shown, I was wrestling for WCW somewhere, because I was the TV champion and I was on every show that they, you know, live event they did. I was on it. So this will be interesting to see. It's going to be one of those weird things. If it's 1993 and I'm 25, because that's what I was when this gets shown.
It's a lifetime.
Where the years have gone. 29 years ago, it'll feel like that. So,
oh, for sure. So for you guys at home, go ahead and bring up if you want to watch along, go ahead and bring up your Peacock Network, and you scroll over to WCW and then scroll down and over to WCW Saturday Night and find, you know, they have those things in seasons. It's very inefficient. I believe this would be the third season, or the second season, 1993. Scroll down to October 9th, and we're going to start in, well, you guys pause till you get it done, and then now you can unpause. We're going to start in 3, 2, 1, play. And we're seeing the presented in complete form possible, and that does have a factor in this particular episode, because the quality of the video does change towards the end. And, so we're looking at the open. What are the first thoughts you have? You see Vader, you see Ricky Steamboat, you see yourself. Look at that guy. What are your thoughts right now?
Well, it's great to see, because it's again, I don't know where the time's gone, but you're looking at all these incredible, Yoshi Kwan there. Wow. So he was English, by the way. Chris Champion, he was English, born in England and then came to America, and he had an English accent. His brother was Mark Starr. And I believe at this time,
Look at that, young Tony Schiavone.
His brother was Mark Starr. Mark Starr was, they were both trained at Boris Malenko's gym, and, Mark was a big opponent of mine, and at a lot of these Saturday night tapings, Mark Starr unfortunately passed away, and he was an excellent wrestler. So that's that. And we start off with another friend of mine, Two Cold Scorpio, and then the other fella, Marcus Bagwell, who's, you know, was a constant in WCW. And the Nasty Boys, and I could go on all night about the Nasty Boys as far as all day. And I have no idea who that lady is. Who is that?
It looks like Missy Hyatt.
That's not Missy, is it?
That's not. Oh, Steve Kaufman's saying it is. Hey, so...
Oh, wow, it's Missy. I just because I could only see the back of her head, I couldn't... You know, usually she was very good at finding the camera. Like, you know, anybody from that time knew how to find the camera. So you made sure that we're not seeing right. So...
Too Cold Scorpio, really ahead of his time.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Look at the height on those drop kicks. Brilliant. And these Saturday Night TV tapings... would you do just one episode? How many would you do?
No, we would do
this time and point.
We would do two episodes, I believe, of Saturday Night. Always two, and then we would do two, and then the main event show, which would be taped on a Monday night, and it was either a Tuesday or a Wednesday. We'd do the main event show, which showed on Sunday night on TBS. There was three tapings of those at one time. Because they were an hour show. Saturday night was a 2-hour show. So, and why I remember two was because my very first night there was the 25th of December, the 25th of January 1993. And I was just Steve Regal then. And on the first show, I did a promo with Jim Ross. And on the second show, I wrestled my first match on American television against Bob Cook when I was just playing Steve Regal. But by this time, in the June of that year, I'd turned into Lord Steven Regal, and I was the television champion. I beat Ricky Steamboat on the night that I broke my neck and never told anybody for the next 20 years at a pay-per-view. And you can see that on the network when at the finish of the match, Fall Brawl, where I German suplex him, and you can just see my neck just go to one side, and lightning bolts shut down my arms and legs. And that was the original time that I broke my neck and somehow kept wrestling for 20 years without telling anybody. Not the smartest thing to have done, but at least I got a career out of it.
The fans here at Center Stage are being treated to a pretty, high profile match to get two tag teams of this quality
in there.
It appears to my fan eye, to my non-wrestler eye, that this is probably towards the beginning of Marcus Alexander Bagwell's career. He doesn't seem to have the experience that he eventually gets. But Scorpio is amazing in there.
Amazing. A lot of people don't know that Scorpio. Yeah, the Nasty Boys were great at what they did. They were great at being the Nasty Boys, and they knew how to do it. And you could, I've spent such a lot of time with them. I've got so many stories about them. We're not going to get into this now because I could do a whole. Well, we'd probably get ourselves all locked up and incriminated. You know, there's a lot of stories that I can tell of them, but there's a lot that I can't because I would never incriminate. And I'll incriminate myself, but not anybody else. We got up to a lot of things together, but they knew exactly how to be the Nasty Boys, and they were brilliant at it. And I wrestled them loads of times with Bobby Eaton, and loads of times with Dave Taylor, and I've been to Japan with them. And doesn't matter how they look, they could just always and just keep going and keep going and keep going. They were trained really well and hard by Brad Reagan's at the AWA wrestling camp, which was very few people got out of there. That was a hard place to go and train. So they knew what they were doing, and they knew how to be them, and they're good stuff. Scorpio, a lot of people, I don't know if they know this, but Scorpio trained in Japan at the New Japan Dojo. Was a graduate of that and was incredibly ahead of his time. When I came to America, I wrestled him a lot on live events. Between Scorpio, there was myself at first. Chris had already left. Chris Benoit came at the same time as me. We all sort of showed up at the same time in January of 93. I think Scorpio got there a few months before. But we all showed up in January. And between the three of us, whenever we were on together, we were doing stuff that nobody else was doing because we had there's this influence of Chris had, Benoit had got his Calgary influence and his New Japan influence, and then he'd been to Europe. Scorpio had picked up bits of all of it from all over and had his own flying style. And we would, unfortunately, there's some matches of us on film. That's it. Everybody nowadays, you can film, see everything of theirs, but there's so many matches we did on live events because this is the time when they were running a lot of live events, and we wrestled each other and we were doing very, very different stuff that sort of came back into play again in the mid 90, well, like end of 95, 96, when Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero came back to WCW, then all the luchadors. But we were already, there was the three of us between myself and Chris and Scorpio were doing this hybrid style that nobody was really doing anywhere. But we were doing it in WCW then. Unfortunately, there's just not that much of it on film.
And the Nasties are doing every bad guy trick in the book. You saw the abdominal stretch with the help of the with the partner, the Phantom
old
tag,
favorite,
and just all kinds of just really fun stuff by the Nasty Boys here, and everything's working.
Grinding
everything
in the kidneys, yeah, great stuff.
Makes you really want to, you know, see these two guys in Stars and Stripes pull this out somehow.
Pull this out. If you're good but villains, that's the whole point of the job, is to make people want to see that the good guys get their comeuppance, and the Nasty Boys are doing a great job of that. They're isolating Scorpio, beating him up, grinding on him, and people want to see him make that tag. So Bagwell,
and there are people standing up. Like, what is the difference between playing for a regular live crowd and live TV crowd? Do you have to do it differently?
Yeah, you really. It becomes a, if you learn how to be a good, very good TV wrestler, you end up wrestling at 10 to 2. What that means is if the cameras can find you, you can be seen, all your stuff can be seen, and you can, the audience at home. The people at the back of you really are getting the worst shot, because they're seeing a lot of the back of your head or not seeing you as much because you're trying to play to the cameras. Some people don't care about that, but TV time is precious. It's your shop window. If you had a shop and if you had a flower shop and you put a bunch of dead flowers in the window, nobody's going to come in. So You've got to put your best wares in the window. Where your best wares on TV are, there's a camera, obviously a main camera that's filming the what we're seeing now, and then there's two cameras either side. As you can see, there's cameramen about 2 to 3 feet away from the front posts. So if you're smart as a TV wrestler, you want those three cameras to be able to pick you up at all times. Right. Now, Scorpio's in the perfect position here because he can be seen, but you can't really see what Bagwell's doing there. You know what he's doing, but you can't really see it. And that's just a byproduct of being in a tag match. In a singles match, you want to be in those front corners if you're beating anybody up, so that all three cameras can get you at all times. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's only, you might think, oh, it's only 4 seconds I've got to beat somebody up in that far corner. But by the time the cameraman at ringside, of which they have the hardest job in wrestling, there's no doubt about it. They have to carry those cameras on their shoulders with offloaded weight, which is about 50 or 60 pounds all night long, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever it is.
Tough gig.
You do not want to have that. They can be your best friend as well. Make it easy for them and do everything so they don't have to come chasing after you to get the shot. But if you are doing something in the corner like that, on the opposite side, by the time they get to you, you've only got maybe 1 second where there's a good shot. But if you're doing it in the front corner, you've got, say, 4 seconds before the referee breaks it. Well, that's like Robert De Niro in Goodfellas when he's kicking Billy Bats in the head. If you've got 4 seconds of just pound it and all three cameras can get a shot of you, that can change your career. Somebody who's watching, that can make them you into a monster, they can feel sympathy for the person there. It's only 4 seconds. You might think it doesn't matter. Those 4 seconds are the important things of how you build up your trust with the audience so that they can see your face. So as a TV wrestler, what you want to do is try to stay in a 10 to 2
right
sort of area where the cameras can get you. Right, because there's 9 to 12 cameras, depending different companies I've worked for. But the three that matter to you are the hard camera, the main camera that films at the ring, and then the two at the side. Well, they're your detail cameras that can pick you up doing everything. But try not to have them chasing after you, because another thing, if they're chasing after you and you're doing things on the far side of the ring, you miss a lot of the shot by the time they get there. Well, you want all your stuff to be seen on TV, so the audience. Oh, it is missy, yeah. So.
She slapped Mark Sellinger Bagwell. But
well, I'd like to slap him as well a lot when I was wrestling him. You know, I just like to slap him full stop.
Stars and Stripes did pick up the victory with a fisherman suplex from Mr. Bagwell. And it might be too late to track the audio on this, but we're going to try to track some of the audio and hear some of the audio of the interviews as they go on. But that was a good. I mean, if you're watching WCW Saturday Night, what's
got you interested straight away?
Match?
Yeah, great opening match, and it's got you interested straight away. And I've just anybody who's listening, who's a wrestler, has just learned how they want to try and figure out. Oh, Charlie Nonis, thought about him for years. Things that you want to try and think about when you're on TV. I'm going to give a little secret away now. If you've got friends or family, if you're a wrestler, or Rip.
My goodness, so, this match is pretty random.
Right.
Rip Rogers versus Charlie Norris.
My old pal Rip. Right. I spent six and a half months in Germany in 1992 with Rip, and he ended up living with me in my trailer because we used to be in tournaments and we'd be in the same building for months, sometimes nearly 2 months in one build particular thing, living in trailers like the circus. And I used to let Rip sleep on the other end of my trailer. I had my bedroom at one end and he slept on the couch at the other. And we were like chalk and cheese. And that's a whole nother thing of me and Rip Rogers spent. But he helped get me to America, believe it or not, Rip Rogers. Why this match is going on. I'd had tryouts for WCW and WWE in 1991. And they said, we like you and we'll bring you in. In 1992, I was in Hanover in Germany for was it 9 weeks? Yeah, 9 weeks with Rip. I was with him the whole from June through December in different places in Austria and Germany. And Rip said to me, I've just called my wife at home. We used to have to walk an eighth of a mile to get to the phone box in those days, right? And he called his wife and he said, there's a new booker in WCW called Bill Watts. Are you still in contact with him? I said, yeah. He said, do you send, they send you letters? Yep. They've got me on file. He said, how's your handwriting? I said, it's the only good thing I've got when I went to school. Cause I used to have nuns when I was from 5 years old, whacking me on the back of the knuckles with a cane when you could hit. You know. I'm so glad when I look back that, it was nuns. That I went. I'm not Catholic, but I'm Church of England. Well, I'm not anything, but you know, I was christened, and they used to treat us Church of England like lepers. But I'm so glad when I looked that I went to a Catholic school until I was nine. That it was nuns and not priests, because I was a stunner when I was seven. And it could have ended up in a real bad way. And that might get edited off this. my handwriting was good. My handwriting was good. And Rip said, Bill Watts, I've wrestled for him. He's very particular about things. He said, do you send a type resume whenever you, because one of the tricks of being a wrestler in those days, you didn't have tapes of anything to send. It was just to send all the promoters around the world a 8x10 of you with your resume. That's how you got booked. Rip said, have you got just still like every 2 months, I would send out all to all promoters all over the world. And it kept me solidly booked. He said, can you handwrite your resume? And I said, yeah. He said, and also put the, he said, I've worked for Bill Watts. He's particular about certain things. So I basically Rip dictated, I had my resume, but dictated a few paragraphs about me training diligently and this and that. He said, I know what Bill Watts likes to hear. I sent that away. 5 days later, I called my wife. I had to walk an eighth of a mile to the phone box. I called my wife and she said, Bill Watts' secretary from WCW has just called. Can you call them immediately? I had to go and get a load of coins from everybody, and I had to walk back the eighth of a mile to where everybody was staying, get as many Deutschmarks as I could. It used to be coin, one Deutschmark, firing them in the phone box. My arm's going in like a fiddler's elbow, just in and out like that, trying to put these coins in. Put straight through to Bill Watts. He said, right, can you start straight away? This is 1992. I said, no. He said, why not? I said, I'm booked here till Christmas. He said, have you got a contract? I said, no, but I've gave my word. And he went completely silent on the phone. And I said, and I thought, well, that's that then. And he went, you've definitely got the job now. After about a minute. He said, most people would have just quit if they hadn't got a contract. He said, I like that in you. And that's how I ended up coming to America. By being a man of, you know, I've always been a man of my word when it comes to me making deals with people on handshakes or whatever. And he said, right. And he said, I'll get you here for the first of January. He said, can you start? When do you finish there? I said, 3 days before Christmas. He said, I'll have you here for the first of January. It took a few extra weeks to get my visa. I started in, well, we just talked about it. I came to America on the 23rd of January. And I did my first Saturday night TV taping at Center Stage in Atlanta on the 25th of January, 1993. Rip Rogers was part of that. And that was nice to see Rip there, because that's a, anybody who gets, Rip's infamous in the wrestling business, but anybody who can get to filter all the bad language and the nonsense out of Rip, as far as him being acting the way Rip acts, he's got an incredible wrestling brain, incredibly talented. And anybody who, if you can just filter that out, is a great, great person. Me and the 6.5 months that me and him spent together, I can definitely not tell you about any of those stories, because they would get us both locked up. Me and him had a hell of a time together, and he fit right in with all that German crew. We might not even get through, must have to skip through this, because these are good stories. Just on things that, when he first came, and Rip has a thing about trying to just be Rip and like gross people out and stuff, right? Well, the crew, that German crew that I used to work on, that was Finlay and Dave Taylor and Tony Sinclair and Colonel Brody and a lot of people that they didn't stand for any nonsense. You had to be a proper, you had to be the, you know, a real, there was a proper pro. And I was with Rip and he was starting a bit, and I pulled him to one side and I said, listen, yeah, you don't want to act like that around here, because these fellas will, like, not take you in. You know, I'm only 23 telling him this, but I'm saying, like, you don't want to act, or just turned 24, I think. Yeah, I had turned 24. Said, you don't want to act like that around these fellas, because they will, this isn't the place. Because he wrestled Finlay in the first week, and Finlay just being Finlay, he didn't know him. And he ended up, like, dragging him about a bit and broke his toe. And Rip come out, and I was like, listen, Rip, you're in a, this isn't a mess about place. These are, if you can't hang here, you won't survive this 6 months. And me and Rip hit it off, and then all of a sudden we became just always together, and then they all accepted him. But a lot of that, Rip won't know this, but I went round to the fellas, because I obviously I've been around them since I was a teenager. These fellas that didn't stand for any much nonsense, and I said, look, he's okay, he's you know, he's all right, he's good in. They realised he was good in the ring, but just the way you act and the way you carry yourself around the wrong people can end your career. And that's probably the first time, if Rip does hear this, that he's had to hear that. But I had to go and straighten it out with a lot of, I've done that a lot in my career, I won't go into it, but to other people, no, it's okay. No, he's okay because he's with me, kind of thing. Don't like give him a chance. And that worked out great with Rip. But Rip helped get me there to WCW. So this is all interesting things for me to see. That again, another for match. Sure. Charlie Norris. They were obviously trying to do something with Rip Rogers, excellent wrestler. If you get the chance to be around him, look for him. Right. What's next?
And so, guys at home, go ahead and pause in 3, 2, 1. Hey, guys, the nights are getting longer, but the breeze is not the only thing that's getting stiff. That's right, especially if you use our sponsor, which is Blue Chew. Now, guys, we all know that confidence can take you far in life. That's especially true in the bedroom, especially when it's time to step up to the plate. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Now, you all know by now that Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and a fraction of the cost. And, man, I tell you, I have never heard anybody say, I'm not glad that I wasn't hooked up with Blue Chew. Because one reason, you can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is pretty simple. Just sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online, you know, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. That's probably the best part. Hey, guys, if this is something you've been thinking about, you got nothing to lose, you know, and they're made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, chew it and do it. Have better sex. That's right. We said it. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code GENTLEMAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code GENTLEMAN. To receive your first month free, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. All right, guys, we're going to come back into the show. We got lots of cool, fun stuff coming up. And we are at a time code, 26 minutes, 11 seconds. 26:11. We're going to unpause and play in 3, 2, 1, play. And what do we have here? Oh, the Sid Vicious is coming up. But who do we have in the meantime? Oh, Tony Schiavone interviewing Steve Austin. Let's take a listen.
All right, fans, back on Saturday night. I've talked to Stunning Steve before, but now it has been announced. Halloween Havoc exclusively on pay-per-view. It's you and Dustin Rhodes for the U.S. heavyweight title. You mentioned that's what you were after.
That's what I was asking for, and it's about time Stunning Steve Austin started getting exactly what he was asking for. Everyone who's seen me wrestle Dustin Rhodes down the road for the world television title knew that when both of us stepped in the ring, they were going to see one hell of a match. And the U.S. title, Tony, now that I'm in a singles mode, means a lot to me. And looking at myself, the qualifications that I possess, I think I'll make an outstanding U.S. champion.
Allow me to interrupt you. I'm sorry for always interrupting you, but I've told you the way I feel about you. I couldn't help but notice in the back that you had gotten that match you said you wanted here just a week ago. You wanted Dustin Rhodes, is that right, U.S. title? I see that smile on his face like a Chelsea cat. I wonder who put that smile there, Steve Austin.
I got the match. I told you I wanted the match, and I got the match.
I know why he got the match, because Colonel Parker's been back behind the scenes getting the job done for you. That's why.
Whether the people are listening to Colonel Tom Parker or they're listening to Steve Austin, the end result is that I do have a title match. I got to say, some of the things he was saying are quite interesting, but the bottom line is, I do have the match against Dustin Rhodes.
I'll tell you what, I believe him. There was no telling he was going to become the biggest star in the world at that point, but he seemed to have all the tools, right?
Everything. You watch that now, and this 1993, and you've seen Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now you look. We always knew Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to be, I always knew he was going to be something. I never assumed that, because none of us knew what kind of, there was no way, how can you imagine what he became? and cultural icon and everything that he just knew that he was. I knew that he was brilliant. There was a lot of people there knew. Everybody knew. I mean, anybody who's seen him, just he's brilliant. It was nice to see, and his style, really, if you look at the way he was talking there, it wasn't much different than when he became Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah, he was. Nice to see Mr. Shivani there, looking so young, and Colonel Parker. I thought he was rated him so much and so entertaining. There's so many incredible promos with him. Anything he ever did, I used to try and watch and be there and try and learn from, because he was just so good at being Colonel Parker. And here's Sid, and we've talked about Sid on this show before. If you haven't, you need to go back and listen to that. I think that's on the Booker episode, right?
Definitely. We got the story of you showing him something. But look at this guy. Look at his appearance, his physicality. It appeared incredible, at this time and point that the there was no limit for what Sid could do in the business.
No. What I really liked there was how Sid, a lot of people don't know the difference. The ropes are a tool for you to propel yourself into somebody. Sid didn't run away from his opponent there to hit the ropes. He kept his eye on his opponent and he backed. And as a pro, you should know where the ropes are at any time. You should know where you're anywhere in the ring where the ropes are, and you back yourself into them and use it as a catapult to hit somebody. I see a lot of people nowadays that fight people and they start, and then they just turn their back on them and run away to use the ropes. In my day, if you'd have turned your back on me, I'd have been right behind you and hit you right in the back of the head. And the reason I would have done it was because Fit Finlay would have done it to me when I was a teenager. Don't turn your back on your opponent. But I see that a lot nowadays. Maybe people should start thinking, Sid did the perfect way of doing that. He backed into the ropes to use it as a catapult to propel himself into his opponent.
And kept his eye on his opponent.
Kept his eye on his opponent, because you never know what they can do. Now, Sid probably wasn't worried about this fella, because obviously the size of him, but he still didn't take his eye off his opponent. So I'm going to let that sit there without exposing too much about this job. There's too many people just turn the back now. And why would you run away from your opponent when you've got an opportunity? This is a different thing than what Sid did, but if you fought up out of a hold and you get an upper hand, why'd you run away? If you're going to use the ropes to help propel you into them, that was the way to do it that Sid just did. Then you're adding to the force. You're not just running away, right? Because if you turn your back on somebody like me or somebody who's got a mindset like me, you're going to get clobbered if I've still got a breath left in me, right?
And, of course, Sid gave that fella Keith, I think his name was, I forget his name, Keith, he gave him a powerbomb, and now he's this is post WWE Sid, so he's a bit bigger. He's a lot more comfortable on the microphone, and he is aligned with Robert Parker. And as always, he's ready to take over the world. He bounced back and forth, so it wasn't too much longer that he went back to WWF at the time.
I just love watching the Colonel. And Sid's is so intense and so believable and so just a presence about him. Sid had an incredible presence about him.
The crowd is a factor in your match for sure. And, you know, I can't wait to see.
And it's real emotion. Like, the people are right there on top. And they can feel that real emotion from Sid. They can feel that the anger, whatever he's trying, you can feel it. And that's great. What was nice to hear on the Steve Austin promo was just to see Steve Austin and hear Dustin Rhodes and two of my great friends who I've been friends with from day one. Now we got
Tex Lessinger and Shanghai Pierce. You might know them as the Godwins in WWF. And one of them is about to face. Look at this young blue chipper right here, young Dustin Rhodes. Just, you know, $1 million. I mean, he just looks
wonderful.
Like money.
Yeah, he's just great. And been friends from, in fact, 1991, when I had my, I spent a week with WCW in England on a tryout. Well, it just happened I ended up working for them for the week. It wasn't necessarily a tryout for me, but it ended up helping me get a job there. And I became friends with Dustin on the first night, and we've stayed friends ever since. We've always been close friends.
And Fred,
Big Fred.
Fred Ottman comes out. Really, yeah. This is post Shockmaster debut, but he's still known as the Shockmaster at this point.
Yes.
And he's really leaning into it now. He's tripping on purpose. And yep. I believe what we have is a tag match. It's a tag match with the Shockmaster and Dustin Rose and against Tex. Those are great names.
Tex Lassinger and Shanghai Pierce. Shanghai Pierce. And I was great friends with these two. And I had a lot of great times with these two, and they were very good at the jobs. And we used to all live in the same apartment block when I first went to WCW. Again, I can't tell much of those stories because we'd all get locked up. But they knew how to do the jobs. They were good, great fellas. Saw them at WrestleCon this year. It was great to see them. I love seeing them.
These are three guys the Godwins or Tex Lesnar and Shanghai Pierce and Dustin, who have a lot of years ahead of them. And the WCW at this time had so much talent that just incredible, went to yeah. WWE and became just the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah. Just reminds me, watching this, it just reminds me of all the times that I was with them, because when I first went to WCW, Bill Watts was in charge, and there was an A and a B crew. The A crew, which was Sting and Vader and the top people like that, were all on the arena shows. Then there was a B crew, and the B crew was doing all small places and high school gyms all over the southeastern part of America. And like 10 days at a time, in because we only taped TV every 2 weeks. And so we'd do TV and then go away for 10 days. Bill Watts made sure there was plenty of shows. Well, the B crew was at this time would have changed a little bit, but originally it was always Tex and Shanghai, Dustin, Barry Windham, myself, Chris Benoit, Too Cold Scorpio, main evented by the Hollywood Blondes, Brian Pillman and Steve Austin against Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas. That was the B crew.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's a crew. I mean, you get those matches every night. That's a great way to go through life.
That was one of the best times of my life as far as, because it was all new coming to America and getting to be, TV was one thing, but then getting to go out and wrestle these fellas every night. And then once I became the TV champion and wrestling Ricky Steamboat every night on these shows, and it was great. And Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson and Brad Armstrong, and it's just an incredible crew. They really had a great crew. WCW at this time.
I mean, we saw Steve Austin. We're seeing these three guys. We're seeing people that had a big part in the Attitude Era, in the biggest yes. boom area of yep. wrestling. These guys yes. were these guys all were part all of part of it.
All and it's, part of it. Yeah,
it's pretty crazy to see that. Along with of course the Undertaker and Mankind, the kind of talent that this WCW in this era, with its rotating cast of people in charge and owners. Let slip through their fingers.
Well, that's just wrestling. You're saying slip through your fingers. It's just wrestling's the way it is, and people come and go, and things work out sometimes, and things don't. And it was just the way it was, and it all worked out. And everybody, sure.
Ottoman's cleaning house. Let me ask
absolutely,
you this.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you believe
I was there. I was there on the night of the Shockmaster. I remember because poor Fred, a lot, he was a lovely, lovely man. And I walked into the dressing room and he was sat on it after that incident. He was just sat on his own. And I felt bad for him. I just went up and put my arm around him because he obviously it was that's if you haven't seen that, you need to see the Shockmaster debut.
We've all seen it. You know, the worst part is that they just had the mics on for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
So you heard that's the worst part.
I was there.
I was there. You hear Sid go, oh my God. You know? Yeah.
Well, you hear Davey, if you very, very faintly, I'm going to have to say it. He goes, he's fucking fell over. you can just in the background.
The story goes there was a 2x4 that was put there by somebody to make the wall more stable that wasn't aware that there was an entrance being made through. And poor Fred Ottman, he's done in wrestling history, but he gets the victory in this match at least with a bear hug slam, let's call it. It looks effective and it looks painful.
Yeah. It will be. And these are all big men. Another thing, have you noticed that in this show?
Gigantic human beings everywhere.
The difference in there's a lot of difference in wrestlers now. These are big men, and you know, just like grown men looking like they can fight. Yeah,
a graphic for the WCW Amateur Challenge. It looks like a fan interactive contest. We lost the ability to bring you audio, folks, so I'm sorry, but I'll describe it best as I can. It's a bunch of fan videos. That looks like Matt Hardy.
I know there is a piece. I'm not sure if that is Matt, but I know there is a piece of footage of Matt doing something like that. So that might be it.
Yeah, that might be it, because that looks like the pictures I've seen of young Matt Hardy. So I guess this is something to get, you know, something we've seen a million times later on in Tough Enough, which is, you know, getting people to send in tapes and using that recruiting process as a form of entertainment as well. And now we are back to the ring. And Steve Coffin has said that, in fact, that was high voltage Matt Hardy.
Okay, great.
That video. Right, well, look who we have, sir. Look who we have here.
Oh, my old friend and partner and the greatest tag team man of all time.
Mr. Beautiful Bobby Eaton.
And let's just give a shout out to Gary Michael Capetta, who's an excellent and lovely man and an excellent ring announcer. And Pee Wee Anderson and Randy Anderson, he was another great help to me when I got there. There's all these are all great memories seeing this, because he really, really, really helped me. Nick Patrick as well. As referees, you know, because I was having to work. I come over here with working a completely different system as far as if in European wrestling, if when you threw somebody, if you weren't touching them when they hit the mat, you weren't allowed to touch them. There was a count on them, a 10 count. So unless you were actually holding them or touching them when they hit the floor, you weren't allowed to cover them or pick them up or grab them. So, as much wrestling experience as I had, it was under a different way of doing it. And so people like Randy were saying, no, you can, you know, and as much as 10 years of wrestling, all the best wrestlers around different parts of the world, you cover him or grab him, pick him up, because I was just used to the referee not allowing you to do that. It was part of the rules. So there's just a little tidbit there that people probably, you know, whatever I might look like later on in this show, I'm still trying to figure this American stuff out, because I've watched it, but if you've had it ingrained into you to wrestle a certain way for 10 years and all of a sudden you've got to change that, which is something that any wrestler has to be, is adaptable. You have to just sometimes asking or having and be willing to listen. And it was great to have people in many ways. I had all these great wrestlers, Bobby being one of them, Arn, Paul Orndorff, people, Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair had come back by now. You know, all these people, we've talked about this before, when I didn't need anybody else's opinions on me. When I had those people to tell me, I've been very, very fortunate. But just simple thing of the referee saying, no, you cover him, or okay, yeah. And just because I didn't know, because I hadn't been... That wasn't the style that I was used to. The rules.
Bobby Eaton is so impressive here. He's this is the best shape I think I've ever seen Bobby Eaton is. This might be the peak of his of his, you know, cosmetic look. He looks really great. Looks like he's doing singles matches. The, Bobby Eaton is destroying this young fella, who I doubt will get any more offense in than we're seeing. Everything that left-handed clothesline he did was just so brutal looking.
Yeah, everything Bobby did was spot on looking. I could talk about Bobby a lot, and we have done on this podcast, and Bobby was the best, and I was very, very fortunate, well, just over a year later, to be in a position where I needed a tag partner, and he was sat in that same building. I was, in the afternoon, I was sat on in the bleachers on one side, and across the ring, after Triple H, when he was John Paul Levesque, had left to go to WWE, and I was going to be in a tag team with Triple H. Well, we were already in a tag team, and it was the first show in January of 1995, and I knew that Triple H had gone to WWE and Ric Flair didn't. He'll tell you a different story, but I said I wasn't going to tell him because he said, "Where's Levesque?" And I said, "I'm not." So he went and talked to Eric Bischoff, found out that he'd gone. He said, "What are you going to do? We had this idea, this big plans for you for this tag match from tag team, put you and Paul Levesque with Sherry Martel." This is in the afternoon in this same building we're seeing now, and I was sat four rows up on the what we're looking at now on the left hand side, and right across the ring opposite me, sat in the bleachers on his own, was Bobby Eaton. I said, "Please put me with him," and that's how we became the Blue Bloods.
And I don't blame you from what we're seeing. Bobby Eaton just, and you know, he is, you said big guys. Bobby Eaton is not a small guy.
No, he was.
You see him in real life. He's big, the Alabama Jam.
And
big
he was guy, so though. Strong, yeah. He had natural tendon strength, and he, fantastic. Just the best. And the best. Again, when I think of these things, how fortunate have I been to been around these wonderful people and here's my, you know, the man. Harley Race and Yoshi Kwan. I love this character. Chris Champion, again, he was English, wrestled in Tennessee, but there was a time he came and he was Yoshi Kwan, and Harley was put with certain people as the manager, because Harley was one person I absolutely thought more of than most people I've ever met was Harley. I thought the world of Harley. He was with Yoshi anyway. I can tell you one little story about Yoshi Kwan. David, but for whatever he lived that character. You never saw him out of that character. When he became Yoshi Kwan, and for some unknown reason, he's Ric Flair.
Look, I mean, and Miss Wendy.
And Wendy as well, lovely.
Who came back in his wife later on, and
yes,
is still part of his life, I believe, even though they're no longer married.
A lovely lady. And this was before doing the Fifi thing, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. This is
before.
It's amazing how people's
that.
Lives
see, I didn't know. I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't seen this now. I thought when she came, she started doing Fifi the Maid.
Oh, I think she was Fifi here. Kaufman just.
Right. Okay.
She just not.
I know because
right
I'd done certain segments with Rick with when Wendy was Fifi. We did a Flair for the Gold thing once that I was on as Lord Stephen, and she was there and that. But that's nice to see her. So Yoshi Kwan lived this character all the time. Davey Boy Smith, for some reason, who was as my old pal, but I was never a ribber. I never ribbed anybody, and I didn't like people ribbing me. Any physical ribs. I've done some mental things, but not bad ones. But Davey, for whatever reason, whenever Yoshi was in the ring, he used to take his hat and go and pee in it, and fill his hat. Is that wicker hat that he had on, he used to just pee in, thought it was funny because Yoshi used to wear it all the time. Whenever he came back from the ring, he didn't realise that his hat was full of Davey Boy Smith's pee, or peed in it and tipped it in the thing. For whatever reason, he used to do that. I don't know. And if you'd have asked me if Yoshi Kwana would have ever wrestled Ric Flair, I wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah.
But I'd have watched it on the night, but I wouldn't have remembered this. So this is nice to see.
And just to think, you have Harley Race in the same vicinity.
Oh, it's
you know,
wonderful.
Bringing just his just presence and his credibility and his history and all those things. But Ric Flair and Yoshi Kwana.
Anybody you put Harley with, you gave credibility to. So there was the obvious things of putting Harley with Vader, but then there was a lot of people. There was two big heavy mask fellas for a while that they put Harley with, and they put Harley with Chris here, Yoshi Kwan. You gave instant credibility to those people because they could talk. The announcers could talk about Harley Race, who's got whatever amount of years of built up trust of being one of the greatest wrestlers of all time with the audience. You're passing that credibility onto to any of his proteges, which is really smart.
And Chris Champion's been around for a while. He's had a journey already in his career. And yeah. You said he lived
one of the new breed.
Like,
he lived yeah. this. He was one of the new breed in Florida Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, that was something else.
Yeah, and but he came back. This is the first time I got to know him as Yoshi Kwan, but he had a really normal English accent, and he'd moved here when he was younger. His brother, Mark Starr, he'd come a bit younger than him, and he'd got an American accent. Because he just, whatever, you know, depending what age you moved here, I think Chris was in his teens and he kept his English accent. Mark Starr hadn't. He'd lost his English accent. But Chris was lived this character. And I was unfortunately there the night that Chris and I was on the show, and I believe it was, I think it might have been Eric Watts who was wrestling. But gave him a corner post, and he took the corner post, and somehow, just like where he is now, his leg wrapped underneath the bottom turnbuckle, and it ripped all his knee out, and he was never the same again. That was the last night I ever saw him. No, I did see him a few years later somewhere, just at a show. He turned up at a show, but he was never the same again, and unfortunately, it wasn't a nice story of what happened to him afterwards because of the horrendous problems that he had from this knee injury caused him to go down a dark path.
Well, he's wrestling Ric Flair right now, who is, again, this is post his WWF run. So it's 93, you know, everybody knows the Rumble in 92 yeah. is when he had his big moment, WWF. And yeah. now he is still considered by many the greatest wrestler in the world. Harley Race gets in a cheap shot on the, and Ric Flair does the flop on the outside of the ring. Fantastic.
As Yoshi Kwan is doing his job and taking the referee, so that the referee, you're not just cheating in front of the referee, which adds to getting more. That's what being a good bad guy is. Don't do things in front of the referee. It makes them mute. You learn how to get people to not like you by doing underhanded things.
There's not too many holes in the in that exchange between Ric Flair and Yoshi Kwan. That was pretty heavy stuff right there.
Yeah.
They really, you know, I guess when you have the audience so close and the TV too, you really have to react for real to.
And so you should. Well, you should be if you want to be a good pro anyway, in my opinion. But
refereeing's changed a lot over the years. Like, refereeing now does a lot of time cues and a lot of, you know, TV stuff. Are the refs nowadays as good as the refs back then, or
some are. Same in those days, there was good ones and there was some not so good. You can never not be good on a TV company, completely not good. They just wouldn't have a job. So, but there's some that are better than others. Nick Patrick was fantastic, and the reason why better than most, because he was a very well trained wrestler. And an injury stopped him wrestling. And his dad happened to be one of the great American wrestlers of all time in The Assassin, Jody Hamilton.
Right.
So Nick could help, which I'm always a big fan of how wrestlers, and I grew up in England. Another one of the things that got me here, not only did I have incredible people to wrestle, a lot of the referees in England were old wrestlers. So they would talk me through things. Well, Nick Patrick could do that with any younger talent. Scott Armstrong, when he was a referee, was great for that. When you're an experienced wrestler and you turn to refereeing for younger talent, it's invaluable to have somebody who can say, just do this, take a breath, do this, do that, and talk you through a match. I used to look for people in NXT that were wrestlers who they didn't have a spot for, and then there was quite a few, and still on in WWE and NXT, that were wrestlers, and I found a spot for them. As I said, look, sorry, we just don't have a spot as a wrestler. What about refereeing? Because you can bring your experience to the younger talent. Look, take a breath. Don't just, you know, I'm going to turn my back now. Right, it's about time you started fighting back a little bit. You can help. You can, a good wrestler, a good referee, if trained as a good wrestler or has a good mind, can help talk the younger talent through matches when they're not quite sure what they're doing sometimes.
We've got a backslide by Ric Flair for the win. Wow.
For the win.
And right before that, we saw, man, I don't know if I've seen this more than once or twice, Ric Flair do the flip thing in the corner, run to the other post, and actually hit the move off the top.
Hit the move.
So this is a, you know, I guess a time and point where the fans are behind Ric. They're, you know, yes. He's still great at it, but I think he and the fans were much more comfortable booing him over the years in a lot of ways.
And I know Ric very well, and he was, anytime he got to be, he was always a better bat. I thought he was great at both, because people came, because they trusted him, and he'd built up such trust as a bad guy. When he was a good guy, people came with him, and they right. You build up trust with your audience. He just was, knowing him, and I can say this because we've had spent so much time together and car rides and conversations. He was just always happy of being a bad guy. I was always happy of being a bad guy. Once I got to America, I was always mostly a good guy until I came to America. Then I had to become a bad guy. Look at Tony here.
Tony looks like he's 11.
Yes.
let's just describe it for you folks. He's wearing a crew neck sweater with a tie that you can barely see, and he's interviewing a much bigger man, Ric Rude. What were your interactions like with Mr. Rude?
I got on very well with Ric. Proper fella. Just as good as it got. Can't say enough about him. I really, really like being around him. Me and him used to get on very, very well. He was always good to me, one of those fellas. I think once I came to WCW and came to America, because I'd gone through whatever I'd gone through, I was accepted by all the old pros as one of them. They saw me do my stuff. They knew I could do it. And so even though I was only 24 and they all just, I got on with them all. And so they'd all offer me bits of advice. They'd all help me. They treated me as an equal. And I got on great with him. And I thought he was brilliant. I just love watching him. I've been in tag matches with him, me and him on live events. There's one with me and him against Davey Boy and somebody. We've done all kinds of stuff. You know, I've been on so many shows with him at this point in time, and I was just a huge fan of his. And went on quite a few tours with him, you know, European tours and stuff in these early days and these first few years. Around him a lot. Loved him. Thought the world of him. Good fella.
And Ric Rude is holding the big gold belt. I believe this is when they had the little kerfuffle with the NWA and they're splitting belts off, and now they call it the big gold belt in this interview, actually, you know, deciding, I think there was a WCW international belt at a time, and then the NWA, you know, stopped endorsing that belt, and so it was called the WCW belt. But Ric Rude has it now, and he's going to defend it against Ric Flair. So that's going to be a great match. I think Ric Rude is pretty much underrated in the history of wrestling. Just, he had it all. He had it 100%.
I don't know if he's under. It certainly wasn't underrated by anybody that at the time or that I knew. Maybe it's just because he's no longer with us. He was highly rated. I mean, highly, highly rated by the people who knew, who were pros.
There was a recent Twitter account that had, it was just, the Twitter account was just called Rick Rude reacting to Atomic Drops. And it's the best thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the way that, you know, and every, you know, I don't remember as a kid thinking, wow, this guy always reacts to Atomic Drops like this. But it just got the fans in every single time. Like, oh, what a wimp, you know? Oh, here we go. The enforcer, Arn Anderson, coming out for his match with you for the TV title. Look at the hair on that man. Look at him. And Arn is a fan favorite at this time as well.
Yes.
That's not, you know, that only lasts but so long in the Horseman world.
But he was brilliant at it because people believed him. And people, he'd built up all that trust. It's a thing that we had the luxury in years ago of being on TV so much and also going to around the country and people seeing us. So you slowly build up. Or in the areas that you're from, you build up your credibility with people. And on, me and Arn started pretty much at the same time. It's just that I was 10 years younger. So we, you know, it's weird because Arn's 10 years older than me, but we've both been wrestling the same amount of time here. But I'm 25 now. So
right, you started when you were a teen, not even like 18, but like, you know.
No, I was full time once I was 16. That was my job. So you know,
you have Sir William. You said at one point that things did not end well with Sir William. You know that it didn't. It was a
well, you know, it's just it was what it was. And but he was a great part of this act.
For sure,
he was a great part of this act. And it and definitely, this is
Arn Anderson. You've got your hand behind it. This is great. You and Arn take a while to lock up here.
Oh, of course.
Look at you. You're disgusted. Look how disgusted you are with everybody.
People didn't like me then. And it's hard for anybody to watch this. And if you're used to modern wrestling, but if you can hear the crowd now, people didn't like me. And it was a lot of me just doing my thing and also being in English. And it was very much at a time with the USA chants and me just being obnoxious and,
yeah, this a lot of USA chants, but really Arn is really popular in this moment,
yeah.
And you two really do a great job of getting the fans into it, because by the end of this match, which just started with our first lockup, by the end of this match, all the fans are on their feet. Notice they're not on their feet right now, and I guess that's the entire point of what you're trying to do here. Man, Arn's in great shape too. Look at him. That's prime Arn Anderson right there.
How fortunate was I from all, you know, having the Fit Finlays and the Terry Rogers and the Pete Robertses of the world and 100 others to wrestle in Europe and then come to America. And in my first year, I'm wrestling Arn Anderson and Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair. And it's ridiculous. What a charm.
And,
when I say I've had a charm life, I've had a charm. What a charm life I've led.
And you guys just locked up, and the fans are chanting. They're USAing. You have never looked more disgusted with a group of people in your life, and now you're going for an arm bar, an arm ringer on Arn.
Yeah, and a proper wrist lock, which is what you didn't see a lot of. You didn't
thumbs
see
parallel like against the wrist, as you showed me. Yes,
and you didn't see in this day and age. It was the overhanded American style, with the exception occasionally of, there wasn't too much many people doing that, and very rarely.
Lord Steven Regal is lightning quick at this time in his career, man. And look at Arn going for those knees. So this is all about the Anderson style was well known at the time. Yeah. Go for a body part, usually the left arm. Yes. And that's what he's doing now.
Let people see what's hurt so they know that there's some damage going on.
Then. Showing your face to the camera, making sure that the camera can see your face right now, right? Or else it's wasted.
And trying to, every little thing to try to get out of it. Just little things of, why wouldn't you try to move a leg? Why wouldn't you try, instead of just going to the next thing?
Yeah, the fans are so behind Arn, and you're angry. And Arn, you're angry, a little scared, but mostly disgusted. I love that comes across on your face. Like that's a strength you've always had, is the ability to emote visually what you were thinking, or what you wanted people to think you were thinking.
And this is a simple, it's a simpler type of people, but you could still go out and do this and it would work, because it's not as much movement as a lot of people do. But if you know what you're doing, you're getting your audience. You don't need to move. You know, I mean, we don't stop at any point. There's no resting anywhere. Everything is, we're constantly moving and going and making things mean something. And that's that thing of mine that I was taught very early on by my biggest, the person I wanted to be like the most, a British wrestler called Pete Roberts. Make everything you do mean something, else don't bother doing it. That was his advice to me at 18. Oh, it's the worst cartwheel in the world. There we go.
Boom. Hey, but that was nifty how you got out of his move. Yeah.
A simple little thing like that. Bump, bang, give me a tackle, back to the arm again. Wrench the arm, movement, up and down, and without running 1,000 miles, we did, and it all made sense on back onto the body part. So this stuff, when I was, again, I was taught, luckily, when
that
I was a teenager.
That was a fantastic sequence. It looked like, it was like you got a cheap shot in, and Arn just made sure to kick you just to get revenge on it. That was fantastic. I'm sorry for interrupting you. That was
amazing. When I was taught, once I got to a certain age, why they used to say this, I don't know, but Terry Rudger was another huge influence on me. Make sure your work, your wrestling will hold up in 30 years. Because even then they knew that stuff got filmed, because you were on TV. Well, this is 30 years later and the detail of this still holds up. And I'm 25 here. So obviously those people that have put, it's not about me, the people who had put the time into helping me had taught me the right things. And to make my stuff look, we look like two wrestlers wrestling. And making people react to it, and every little movement and detail, there's reason behind it. And look, just in a hammerlock, why wouldn't you put your hand to try to stop the pain? Little things like that. Just a lot of my stuff is stuff that you have to go back and watch the detail. It's detail stuff, and to struggle here instead of just going into it and trying.
Looks like an actual struggle,
right? And not everything can be like this. Sometimes you need a lot of move. You need every. That's why there's different styles of wrestling. But I wasn't cut out for doing lots of big moves and hitting the ropes. I had to know what worked for me.
But you guys aren't staying in the same thing like for more than 5 or 10 seconds. Like
no, never. And everything we're not sitting in it. You hear this horrible term, rest hold. Should never be a rest hold. You can be put in holds. You're never resting. You're always trying to get out of it in some way. Look. Even there, I'm trying to put my hand on there. There's reaction on my face. I'm trying to grab his head. I'm not resting in anything. There's no such thing. Should never be anything that is a rest hold. I got sucked into a little bit of that when I first went back to the WWE in 2000, because certain people work like that and they'd stick you in a chin lock or they'd stick you in. No, I never stop moving, or Arn never stops moving. We're both constantly, even if it's only little movements, we're making it look like there's a competition going on and you're fighting to keep a body part in a hold, or you're fighting to get out of a hold. There's little tiny things going on all the time. There is not a single moment of rest in any of this. And just little things like that now, just shaking that off to make sure everybody understands that there's been a lot of pain going on. And just a simple sidestep. He's got the better of me, and I just sidestep him. And now you can't see this, but I'm keeping the referee. And now the cheating goes on, and I get the advantage. And now it's understandable if you've never seen wrestling before. I'm a horrible bastard. Right? And now I'm going to take advantage of it, because he's been, and hopefully we keep going back to me doing little things like, oh, there we go. Just all that work that he's just done on my arm and all that, I'm making sure people can see that it damaged me. And now I'm going to, see, people think they invented this. I was doing this in 1993. I was doing that in the early 80s. There's people after me that were doing that, and people, all these things. You'll see me doing stuff that people seem to think come along later on. I was doing stuff before anybody was doing a lot of things like that. I was doing them. It's just that I don't get any, you know, it because of different generations. Right, so I've...
You've got him down now.
Right. Well, so he got poked in the ribs with a point of an umbrella. I've hurt his ribs, and now I'm working away and taking the trying to hurt his ribs more and his midsection. Boom, headbutt in the stomach. It all makes sense. It's all look, knee, instead of dropping in on his shirt, knee on his sternum. It's all about now I'm pushing down onto his abdomen and not just putting him. It's not about look. See, I'm pushing him forward. To bend his ribs forward,
and sucking back him up for the regal stretch.
I didn't have the regal stretch at this
time.
Oh,
really? Okay.
No, I didn't have the regal stretch until 1994. Breaking down that midsection. Regal stretch became a thing in. That's just me working on a midsection and a strike to get somewhere. Bump.
How was Arn's conditioning?
Always good. Me and Arn, we're not body people, but we were both in condition. But Arn was always a conditioning guy. You know, he had to be because he had to wrestle. He was doing the same job as me before this, right? He was the TV champion a lot. And when you're the mm-hmm. TV champion, look at that kick out. He kicked out and got away. You don't see too many people doing that. You get away from your opponent when you kick out.
And also, right, you struggled to get him in the butterfly because your arm was hurt.
Yeah. Every little detail. It's all about that. It's not about, I'm never worried about, what about the audience? And bang, back to that again. But I'm keeping the
umbrella to the midsection.
Right. And the point of the umbrella. Right. So, and I'm still hobbling up. It's just nonstop. It holds up. It's like a fight scene in a movie that makes sense. If you don't understand pro wrestling, you can understand this because there's nothing that looks. I don't want to. Well, nothing that looks like it doesn't hurt, and it all means something.
Sir William with a shot to the umbrella to the head this time.
Yeah.
And now he's set up for you to do your thing.
Back to the midsection again. Boom.
Going back and forth, always trying to get the win, always trying to get the pin,
and kicked out like a because my life depends on the fact that he can beat me. Because if he beats me, I make less money, and just make not even thinking of what I'm just okay. I've grabbed hold of him, put my knee in his midsection, and take the wind out of him, drag him forward. There's nothing you're not gonna. Nobody's ever taught me how to do that. Okay, it's common sense. I can pull on the back of his head and put my knee in his stomach, and it's going to make it harder for him to breathe.
Sunset flip, and you sit, on his sternum, which you've been working on the whole time.
Yeah, and then kick on again, and body weight all across him, full body press, not just a lame pin, full body press.
Now the fans are starting to get invested. They're getting quiet because, you know, this is the point of the match where their guy's getting beat. And, you know, you don't want to see it happen. But when Arn livens up, I believe this crowd is gonna catch a lot of fire. You really do a great job getting the crowd involved in this match.
And I'm watching this now, and I'm also thinking I'm not liking a lot of it because I'm thinking, yeah, but I'm 25 and I'm still trying to figure this out. There should have been more talk there for the midsection. I'm just trying to. I'm still to this day. That's why I don't like. It's weird for me watching. I don't like watching my stuff right. Because I go, well, I should have done that. I should have done that. I should have done more of that. But even without doing that, it still holds up.
And it's a 15-minute time limit. It is for the TV title. Arn throws you in the corner, and you reverse with a knee to him charging in.
And now he's giving me some of my medicine by hitting me in the midsection. Bang.
Turnabout.
Knocking the wind about me. And I'm reacting accordingly.
Oh, stomp to the midsection on you from Arn. The spine buster is a unique move and an interesting move. And it's something, one of the few moves you can just associate with one guy who did it better than everybody and pretty much came up with it. He gives you a knee to the stomach there. Were you a fan of the spine buster as a spectator?
As a spectator, yeah. It always looked incredible.
No one's ever done it like Arn. It's weird. It's hard to say. He literally leaves his feet for a split second so he can pivot that,
right,
that foot.
Right, that arm wasn't covered, so I lifted up.
There you go. Arn's trying to get the pin on you right now. Look at the crowd. Look at the crowd responding to Arn just punching you. You're falling down, but the crowd is on their feet. The whole place is on their feet right now.
I'm just trying to get away there.
He shot you to the ropes, and you are lifting him up, and he reverses out. There it is, the big spine buster.
And obviously there was a little, I used to be pretty strong. There was obviously, was sweating. And struggled to get him up there, but I held on to him, which is a vital thing if you're important. It didn't quite go. I get him over my shoulder the way I wanted to, but I held him. I didn't drop him because you always got to make sure you don't drop your opponent on his head.
And he gets the spine buster, and time ran out at the three count. It was perfectly timed the way you guys did it. The bell rang right as the three was about to be counted, and Arn gets his revenge. What are your thoughts looking back on that match without being too hypercritical of 25-year-old William Regal?
Well, everything made sense and it all meant something. So that's all which was what I mentioned before. You can make everything you do mean something, or don't bother doing it, that accomplish that. So that's all I can say about myself. I'm not going to go, that was good, or that's for other people to say. But we made the most of what we had, and I can tell you there was no more, and this is one of those things that I don't like saying, there would not have been more than about a minute of me and him talking about that before we went out.
And we're going to go ahead and pause for commercial break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, guys, we all know that life is confusing. I often joke that if there's such a thing as coming around a few times, this is my first time here, because life doesn't come with a user manual. There's no life for dummies. Unfortunately, that's the case. So when life's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating any of life's challenges can make me, you, feel unsure, whether it's a career change, and we know we've had a few of those, a new relationship, or becoming a parent, or even being a parent. Therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills, which makes therapy the closest thing to a guided tour of the complex engine called you. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient and accessible anywhere, 100% online. Now, for me, I like the idea of a therapist because I live inside my own head a lot. And, you know, doing this, I'm partners with Mr. Regal, but in my full-time job, I'm the boss. I'm, you know, any idea I want to do, I just do. And sometimes that's not the best thing. Sometimes you need a governor. And sometimes you need someone just to bounce some ideas off of. And for me, that is a benefit of therapy. And of course, you get deeper into things like, you know, childhood trauma and self-empowerment and coping skills. You know, therapy can be an amazing thing. And there's really no easier way to get it than BetterHelp.com because it's the world's largest therapy service. They've matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/gentleman. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/gentleman. And we thank BetterHelp for sponsoring the podcast.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
The 5-star reviews are in and it's confirmed. SaveWithConrad.com can save you thousands. Jimmy E writes that we saved his family more than $1,000 a month. James S says we saved his family more than $1,200 a month. But how much can you save? It's free to find out right now at SaveWithConrad.com. But if you've got a second mortgage, if you've got credit card debt, or even worse, if you're in a 30-year loan, it's not a matter of if we can save you money, but a matter of how much at SaveWithConrad.com.
All right, guys, we are back. You can go ahead and unpause, and I'll give you the time code 1 hour, 16 minutes, and 18 seconds. 1:16:18 in 3, 2, 1, play. So you generally speaking, did you enjoy seeing that match with you and Arn?
Yeah, it was good to see just two pros doing the thing, you know, and if I look at it, could I have done things better? Yes. But as far as not setting anything up and going out there and being pros and just doing our jobs, it accomplished it. We looked like two pro wrestlers having a contest. Nothing, there was no see-through anything. And then we got the job done and we got the crowd where we wanted them in the end, and that's your whole job. So
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat coming out for your main event with his presentation that he developed in the WWE with the fire, the dragon wings, the lights go out so you can see the fire a little bit better, and he is still Ricky the Dragon Steamboat even at this point of his greatest career. He's still great,
just absolutely brilliant.
Look at this guy. It's time.
And just, you know, when you see somebody like him come through, I mean, just perfect. I mean, it's funny with it being Ricky, but you've got the perfect dragon and the perfect dragon slayer, right? It's a story across time. You've got, and it's just...
It cuts away to a commercial break and it comes back in and they're in the middle of wrestling and we see Vader hit a big splash on a Steamboat and races inside the ring. Seems like maybe the beginning of the match. What was it like? How many times were you in the ring often with Vader?
I never wrestled him, but I've tagged with him only a couple of times.
And as a character, Vader was a unique individual. I've heard many stories.
We didn't have a lot to do with each other at this time. I got to know him for a short, like after when I went to WWE in 1998, he was there, and he was a different fella then. At this time, I wasn't, and I'm just being honest, I wasn't the biggest fan. I thought it was a bit of a liberty taker. And so I just kept away. It wasn't somebody. And there were, there's a few things that happened between me and him. I can't really, but I did help him once when I didn't want to, because Harley Race asked me to teach him some stuff for a match he had with Takada in Japan. And I just, I wasn't too happy about doing it because I thought he would was a liberty taker and would take liberties with people with it. But Harley asked me, and because I thought so much of Harley, I did it. But that was about the only interaction we really had. He wasn't somebody I hung out with or anything. And that's a true story. I took him to a ring in Munich in Germany, and on the mats in the afternoon of the show, I showed him some things to protect himself in case Takada went off on him, and he did that. And then not long after, you know, I don't know what the time frame was. It's gone so quick now, but it's when he had his thing with Paul Orndorff, so he was gone much after. I did it, and it was, again, it was only because of Harley Race, but I spent a few hours showing him some things just to make sure he didn't get proper creamed. And unfortunately, there's nobody there to prove it, but I'm telling you, that's a fact. Because I'd trained, obviously, with a lot of people, good kickers, and I was always training with different people, Japanese people, and different for years, and different styles of stuff, and I knew enough to block things and to make sure he didn't get completely annihilated if Takada wanted to, or at least how to get through that. And that's the truth. But it was only because Harley asked me. I said no at first because I didn't want to, because I thought if I show him anything, he's going to just not, because he already, like, clubbers people. He's obviously right. Big. I don't want him to start taking liberties. The same thing that I said basically to Sid. We talked about that in another episode. I wouldn't do it. We had very little contact, and then he disappeared. But whenever I've seen him after that, whatever happened in the WWF, he was a different person then. He was always nice, polite, and whatever else. And any time I met him, we always got on very well and sat and talked about, because he'd been to Germany. So it was just at this particular time, me and him, I just kept out of it. Wasn't somebody I cared about, and I kept out of his way. And I'm certainly not out of his way for anything about worrying about him. He wasn't somebody I didn't like the way he knocked extras about and stuff.
Well, so, he certainly... putting a beating on Ricky Steamboat right now.
Yeah. One thing I will say, he was incredible. I thought he was absolutely, at this point, he was incredible.
And a incredible nothing, character and presence, yeah. too.
And I might have got on really well with him if I'd have actually on ground with him. And because I've been around people who have, and I've knocked people about, it was just, we never socialized in any way, and I never talked to him much in the dress. I might have said hello now and then, and he might have said hello, but that was it. We had nothing. And then I did this thing in 90, I think it was 94, or it might have been 93, whenever he had the match with Takada. We'd been on a European tour, and Harley had asked me to, he said he was a bit worried about him getting straightened out by Takada, and so I took him to the in the afternoon in Munich, went to the ring, and it was just the mats, actually. They hadn't finished building the ring, and I just showed him a few things to try and protect himself, or how to catch a kick and turn somebody, how to block a kick and turn him.
Just put in case things got ugly.
Just a few things, just in case. And I spent a few hours. But I do know that he didn't, that was a... that was it, and he said thanks, and that was it. I never had any more to do with him, really.
And Ricky Steamboat showing us why he can always get the crowd going and is always so exciting. You know, he's getting beat up the whole time. And now this flurry of exciting offense and just the way his body language and everything, it's just, everything just hits really hard. Oh, it's really great.
Just the most fantastic fire and just brilliant fire.
He's always been like that. I remember the first time I saw him, he's always been that guy that once he gets on fire, it's oh, wow, big suplex to Vader from Steamboat.
Ricky was just, and again, when I'm watching this, what I'm thinking more of is how fortunate I was to wrestle Ricky. In my mind, I could be wrong, but it was pretty much about 6 months, because I got the TV championship. I beat Ricky for that in the September of 93, and then I wrestled him for the next 6 months and whatever until, and I was there on his last match, his match with Steve Austin, when he fell off and hurt his back, and he just never came back. I was there that night as well, or that day actually.
He's there. Taking apart the railing for something here. So that was his, you were there against Austin. He hurt his back. That's his last match. I believe he's doing something soon, but right now he just decided to take apart the barricade and hit Vader with it. I guess when you're facing a Vader, all bets are off.
Yeah. You gotta slay that dragon.
Yeah.
You gotta slay the monster. Right. You've got to use anything you can to slay the monster. And they're both doing a fantastic job of this. Leon set it up perfectly, just being bullying him and knocking him around. And now Ricky's got that fight. It's great stuff to watch.
I mean, you would think it would be when you hear it's these two guys together, you would think, Steamboat is getting mad at Race. But these two guys are guys who pretty much, at this point in their careers, could have great matches with anybody.
Fantastic pros, yeah. Just brilliant. Vader know how to be Vader. Ricky know how to be Ricky. And when you put them in the ring, it works.
A man the size of Vader moving like that. Oh, the ref took a hit, and he's out. Nick Patrick rolled out of the ring. Very few big guys ever moved like Vader. People don't talk about that enough.
Fantastic. Just incredible athlete.
I mean, his cartwheel was almost as good as yours, you know?
Because cartwheel would have been, anybody's cartwheel would have been better than mine. I do know that I had the worst cartwheel in the entire wrestling industry, and we got to see it before.
Oh, Harley Race taking a suplex from Steamboat. Yoshi Kwan coming in the ring. And the numbers are too much for Ricky Steamboat.
No, too much.
This match is broken down, Mr. Regal.
Yep. Which is what wrestling's all about.
Oh, they're setting him up in the middle of the ring, stretching him out for Vader to do his big bob. And who is it but Cactus Jack Mick Foley to the rescue?
I absolutely loved Cactus Jack, as the character of Cactus Jack. It was fantastic.
Man,
I'd been seeing Cactus Jack before I ever came to America, because they used to show WCW late night in England. So I'd started seeing some of it, and when he first came on there in the late 80s, I just straight away, there was just something so unique about him. So anyway, I enjoyed that. I mean, bit cringeworthy watching myself. I don't like watching myself, but that was good.
A fun way to close the show with.
Unfortunately, that's 30 years gone, or 29 years gone. Well, like that.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that. But what we can talk about is we want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. Thank you, Wesley and Dominic and Steve Kaufman, Dave Green and Conrad, for all you do for the show. And a great watch-along episode. Thanks for doing it. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Woo Wings, a virtual restaurant concept from the man himself, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Enjoy the legendary flavors and world championship wings by ordering with your Uber Eats or Postmates app. Wu Wings is now open in Nashville, San Antonio, Jacksonville, Florida, as well as Huntsville and Tuscaloosa in Alabama, with many more locations coming soon. Try the only chicken wings worthy of carrying the name of the 16-time world heavyweight champion. Tell them, Nate.
Wings! Legendary flavors! World championship wings! Woo! Woo wings! Yeah! Woo woo!
You're hanging out with some friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. Nah, you live nearby. You can make it home okay. It's no big deal. What are the odds you'll get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that could happen? Your insurance goes up? You lose your license? You lose your job? You total your car? You kill someone? Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So, if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Are you ready?
The Christmas countdown's on at JCPenney. Through Saturday, use your coupon and dash away with very merry savings on last-minute gifts across the store, like fine jewelry stocking stuffers up to 70% off after coupon, and save up to 50% on comfy, stylish outerwear for the whole fam. Add curbside pickup to make your trip extra quick. We got your holiday. JCPenney. Offers good on select items through 12/24. Exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.